TED Audio Collective.
You're listening to How to Be a Better Human. I'm your host, Chris Duffy. When it comes to sports, I know nothing. I really cannot overstate how little I know about sports. There was a period of several years in a row where I kept putting together comedy shows, booking the venue and the comedians, and then realizing that it was at the exact day and time as the Super Bowl. I was like, why is no one buying tickets for this? And then it became abundantly clear. And that is why the Super Bowl is now a recurring event in my calendar. And when it comes to playing sports, I am not much better. In high school, I was the first person ever benched on the ultimate Frisbee team. So I think that gives you a really clear sense of the kind of fierce, unstoppable competitor that I am. If I'm being honest, I have always felt like sports were for other people, not for me. But today's guest, Jody Avergan, is all about sports. He's also reported on them and built a career around them. And I have to say, over the course of our conversation, Jody really changed my mind. He convinced me that whether you're already a rabid sports fan, or if you're someone like me who's kind of a complete novice, sports can be a lens through which we can really become better humans. Jody hosts a new podcast for the TED Audio Collective called Good Sport, which gets deep into all these sorts of issues. Here's a clip from the show.
This is the part of the first episode of a new podcast series where I tell you who I am and what we're up to. My name's Jody. I've reported on politics, culture, and sports for a long time, even better when all of those combine. I hosted a podcast called 30 for 30. I've done stories about the NBA and Olympics and World Cup soccer. Every big life lesson I've learned has come through sports. How to channel my competitive fire. How to be a supportive teammate or boss or partner. How to focus on what I can control and try to let go of what I can't. I've learned all of that by playing sports. I'm not saying it's the only place you can learn those lessons. It just happens to be where I have.
We'll be right back with Jody Avergan after this timeout. Timeout, is that right? Huddle? Break? I know that there is a sports joke that I should be making here, but I honestly do not know enough about sports to make the right one. Support for How to Be a Better Human comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or you just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switch to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/betterhuman. That's odoo.com/betterhuman. Odoo. Modern management made simple.
Canva presents unexplained appearances. It was an ordinary workday until...
That presentation appeared out of thin air.
Also, it's eerily on brand.
Wait, did that agenda just write itself?
Words appear, making this unexplainable case...
Unexplainable? It's Canva's AI tools.
I can generate slides and words in seconds.
Really? The real mystery is why I'm only learning this now.
Canva.com, designed for work.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing or
politics,
country music,
hockey,
sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. On today's episode, we're talking sports with Jody Avergan.
Hello there. My name is Jody Avergan. I'm the host of the new show from the TED Audio Collective called Good Sport. You know, as a kid, I played soccer and football in high school and, you know, a bunch of sports. And then I eventually landed on a sort of alternative sport called Ultimate Frisbee. As seriously as one can take something, I took Ultimate that seriously. And for about 20 years, it was kind of the most important thing in my life. And I played in high school and college and club and internationally and professionally. And I ended up on SportsCenter once for a highlight.
Yeah, you had this amazing catch that kind of like went viral and was
Googled.
On TV.
You went to the second page of Google.
Nice work. I watched the video even.
Fair enough.
I feel like you're saying that somewhat facetiously, but truly when I look you up and when I learn about you, Ultimate Frisbee Champion, like that is the title that is bestowed upon you.
I know. Well, maybe I need to like pad my resume elsewhere. But no, you know, I took it very seriously. And, you know, I think like I downplay it a little bit because I know that some people don't think of it as a real sport or whatever, or need a little convincing. But it is a wonderful sport, a wonderful community. So it really was the kind of organizing thing in my life for a long time and continues to be. I mean, you know, all my friends are folks I played Ultimate with. And so even though the knees are a little creakier now, we're not really getting out there and running around, I still feel the legacy of it. And I'm still a little involved here and there with some coaching and some advising and so forth.
I often, in the narrative I tell myself of my own life, think that one of the like defining characteristics of what makes me is that I never liked and was never good at sports. And as a result, I had to find an alternative way to bond with other men. And that way was making jokes and cracking jokes and being kind of on the side. I sometimes think about it as like, in my mind, there's like two categories of like straight male friendships. There's like activity guys who are like, let's go play pickup basketball. Let's go do this activity. And then there's like bullshit guys, which is like the guys who sit around on the side and just like bullshit with each other. And I am like,
but I like both of those, Chris.
there's a hard line between them. But if this is a spectrum, I am on one side of that spectrum.
Right. It's indoor kids, outdoor kids, you know, kids and running around kids for sure.
Yes.
You know, what I hope is everyone finds the world in which they can kind of learn their lessons about how to try and be a better person.
What are some of the most important lessons that you have learned from sports? Aside from like, I think in my mind, the obvious like good sportsmanship, like treating other people well, but like what are the deeper lessons that you've actually taken away from sports?
I think that teamwork in the largest sense and how to build a kind of collective, how to work towards a goal together. I mean, I'm now into my professional career where I've had to manage folks. And I feel like I'm often referring back to team dynamics and kind of how to perform under pressure, right? And sort of how pressure, I mean, sports gives you this sort of artificial environment in which like, okay, you have this nice little thing, this collection of human beings, right? And everyone sort of is their own person and has their own dynamics and their own interpersonal. And now we're going to put it under a lot of pressure and we're going to see what happens. And so it's like a nice little test lab for that kind of stuff. The other thing that I come back to a lot is, and this evolved over my athletic career and my thinking about sports, how I think about achievement and how I think about success. And I think there's this trap, I think, with sports because there's a score, there's a winner, there's a loser, there's a championship. It feels like, oh, it would be so cut and dry to just say like this person succeeded and this person did not. And of course, it's much more nuanced than that. And I've come to understand the lessons that you can learn from losses, the way in which achievement is a kind of moving target. And then the big one for me is also that like achievement is a goal in and of itself, and that like clearing a bar teaches you something. And sometimes, how do I put this? Like sometimes you have to move the bar to a place where you can clear it in order to get that feeling of achievement. And so, you know, a specific example I've had in like playing sports is like I've been on teams where the goal has been, we want to win a championship, right? All that or nothing. But what happens is year after year after year, if you fall short of that goal because it's unrealistic or just because something happens and you don't achieve that goal, it can get really debilitating. And I've seen it sort of take the wind out of the sails of a team or a collective that's trying to achieve something together. So sometimes when I've been a coach or an advisor, I've just been chatting with folks, I've said, well, maybe we need to come up with other goals, either incremental goals. At this practice, we're going to do this. At this tournament, we're going to do this. We're going to go to easier tournaments that we're pretty sure we can win that are maybe a little below our level because they give us that sense of achievement. Achievement and success is a kind of learned habit. And sometimes you need to put yourself in an environment where you just feel that sense of achievement and satisfaction and accomplishment. And then you carry that forward. And the beautiful trick is that actually probably sets you up to achieve that loftier goal in the long run if you kind of learn what it feels like to accomplish and accomplish along the way.
So you host this new show called Good Sport.
Yes.
What does it mean? And I imagine this is a question you're going to get a lot if you haven't already gotten it. What does it mean to you to be a good sport?
Oh, gosh. You know what? You're the first person to ask me that. Not just because this is the first interview I've done with that, but I really, I love the name. The idea behind the show is that sports can be a force for good and that it can make us better people and better citizens and that we should kind of like embrace that wholeheartedly. And I kind of think of the show in some way as a, we're going to plant our feet and we're going to make a defense of sports as something that is messy and wonderful and full of lessons and full of complexity in all the wonderful and messy ways that life is. And my kind of, what I've been thinking about is just like, what a blessing it is in some way that like this thing that I do where I get to run around and stay in shape and get competitive and like just like breathe hard and sweat and be on a team is also a thing that can like teach me all these lessons about the real world. Like what a great gig or what a great offer. People either fall into this binary of like the real world intrudes on sports and makes it not fun. And so like we feel bad in some ways when we talk about sports. And then the reaction to that is like, well, shut all that off and just like make it mindless and stick to sports, as they say. And I'm just kind of like, no, like the real world should intrude on sports and sports should bleed into the real world. And that's kind of what's so wonderful about it.
What are some of the negatives in sports that you're combating?
We have a whole episode about how kind of the way that we talk about sports has become the way that people talk about almost everything, right? And so you look at political talk or social media and it really, really feels a lot like, oh, this is the way people talk about sports. You know, it's trying to score points. It's trying to drive a wedge. It's trying to get as heated as possible. It's all about my team versus your team. And if you're not on my team, then I'm just going to dismiss you out of hand. So yeah, there's a lot that's like worth reckoning with in sports. But again, at the end of the day, I think of that as a positive, right? It's like, here's this little world. Here's this little ecosystem that refracts all these other larger things that we have to work out for ourselves. And so we can work them out in the world of sports and learn some lessons there and carry them forward into the rest of our lives.
I'm curious because listening to you talk and hearing the topics that you cover on the show, it seems like so much of what makes something a good sport and teaches these lessons is really present at even the lowest, most casual levels of the sport.
Yeah.
Like it does not, in fact, in some ways, it's actually harder to find them when it gets to be like professional, big money sports. I don't know, maybe you disagree with that.
No, I think that's right in a sense. And you know, we on the show go back and forth a lot between like, oh, is this a show that's about watching sports and seeing the lessons in there? Or is this a show about playing sports? And we were a little worried that like, oh, it needs to be one. And then we just realized like, it can just be both and it can float back and forth. More often than not, in the episodes and the sort of conversations that I've had, it does float a little bit more towards the lessons that you learn by participating in sports. And that often starts when you're kind of forging yourself as a human being and learning all the lessons about the world anyway. And that's, you know, when you're a kid and moving through your 20s. But, you know, the beautiful thing about sports is you can carry it forward. And you still see that, though, in professional sports. I'll tell you, like, one of my favorite things that happens almost every year when someone wins a championship, often it's in the NBA finals, I'll notice it. But, like, someone will win an NBA final championship and they'll just, like, go and sit on the bench and put their head down and everything around them is chaos and exuberance and people are going crazy and they're just like retreating into their own heads. And when I see that, even among the best of the best in the world, I kind of see a little of myself and I see a little of all of the things that we've been talking about in there of just kind of like, oh, what really matters in this moment is that this person, something changed inside of this person and they're sitting there with that in this moment.
Can you tell us about one of those moments that stands out in your own mind as like a moment that changed you and taught you something?
I mean, certainly coaching has been incredibly satisfying to me. You get a bunch of people who come from different backgrounds and are bringing their selves to this team enterprise and you bring them together and you try and get them all on the same page, both in terms of strategy, but in terms of kind of what kind of team are we going to be? What are our goals? How do we communicate? And you build this little ecosystem within the team. You kind of have to put a lot of that on your shoulders early in the season or early in the tournament to just kind of like set the agenda and so forth. In an ideal world, there's always a moment where hopefully later in a season, hopefully, you know, kind of when you're playing in a really big game late in the season, where the team will be gathering for a huddle. And normally, right, you'll get into the huddle and I'll go and I'm the coach and I'll say some stuff and, you know, I'll give 2 or 3 points, some strategic, some sort of emotional or whatever. I always look for a moment in the season where the team can start to gather as a huddle and I'll just take 3 steps back or I'll just stay back. And ideally, the team doesn't notice that I'm not in the huddle. the captains or the leaders know what to say. The vibe among the team is such that they don't need that hand on the tiller. They're already doing it all themselves. Everyone's playing their role. And so that's one of the things I always kind of look for and is a sign that I've done my job.
I mean, it feels like such a direct parallel to parenting.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, I'm a parent now. It's, yeah, 100%. I mean,
are your kids old enough that you're directly applying these lessons or not yet?
I have a 5-year-old, so we're getting there. You know, right now it's mostly just kind of like, can I capture this creature's attention for more than 15 seconds at a time? Like, that stuff will come in. And she's starting to play sports. I mean, you know, I'll tell you, like, parenting, especially relatively new parenting, is, you know, an exercise in like an endless number of moments that kind of blow your mind or just like crush your heart or whatever. But one that definitely rose above was when I saw my daughter write her name on a soccer ball for the first time, and just something about that in her little like scrawl, you know, she wrote her name on a soccer ball. And I was like, oh, it took me like half an hour to recover from that one.
When you think about your daughter and playing sports, what do you want for her? What do you want for her to get out of it? What do you want for her to participate in? How do you frame it for her? Or how will you frame it?
Olympic gold or bust.
And, okay, great. Hey, set the bar high.
Yeah, yeah. No, and anything else, don't come back. Don't come back home. No, it's funny. I mean, one of the things I've been thinking about a lot doing this show and thinking about my athletic career and kind of thinking about the way that I approach sports and kind of what kind of person I was like when I was playing sports very, very seriously. I was not a necessarily very, like, fun person or like, you know, I think a lot of athletes are this way, but I was certainly one of these athletes that was like fueled a little bit by like having an edge, fueled a little bit by like grumpiness. I'm also just like in my teens and 20s and I'm just like working stuff out, right? And a lot of that is being poured into sports. But I think the big lesson there, and one that I think I hope will carry into my parenting, is that like people need to work things out in their own way. And some people are going to be like exuberant and joyful, and some people are going to be a little grumpy, and they're all hopefully going to get to the same place, which is like achievement and a sense of satisfaction and an understanding of what it means to work with others. To answer your question specifically, like what I really hope for is that like she finds what kind of person she is in sports and like ends up on teams with like coaches who understand that there are lots of different ways that people can express themselves through sports and sort of, you know, grow within that environment. I'll probably keep my eye out for the coaches who are like my way or the highway.
Yeah.
Just because that's not my style.
Well, also, I mean, if she gets to the highest level, she's already practiced autographing the ball that she can give away. So she's already going to have that skill locked
down. That's exactly right. Hopefully her handwriting is a little better by that point, but yeah.
We're going to take a quick break and then we will be right back. But in the meantime, I am going to try and convince Jody to sell me that soccer ball, since it sounds like it's going to be very valuable. Shout out to Claritin for supporting this episode and providing us with samples. You know, I used to think that I didn't have allergies, that I just happened to have itchy, runny eyes and sneeze all the time and feel really stuffed up for a couple of weeks every year. I thought that was just natural and normal. But luckily, for those of us who live with the symptoms of allergies, we can live Claritin Clear with Claritin D. And the difference between how I felt before I took Claritin D and after was breathtaking, or more like breath making, because all of a sudden I wasn't coughing and sneezing all the time. I could just breathe easily. Designed for serious allergy sufferers, Claritin D has two powerful ingredients in just one pill that relieve your allergy symptoms and decongest your nose so you can breathe better. So if you are ready to live life as if you don't have allergies, it's time to live Claritin Clear. Fast and powerful relief is just a quick trip away. Find Claritin D at the pharmacy counter. Ask for Claritin D at your local pharmacy counter. You don't even need a prescription. You can go to Claritin.com right now for a discount so you can live Claritin Clear. Use as directed. On today's episode, we're talking sports with Jody Avergan. On his podcast, Good Sport, Jody talks with fascinating people from all corners of the athletic world. And here's a clip that really resonated with me from an episode that Jody did with Bomani Jones. You may know Bomani from ESPN or from his HBO show Game Theory. And in this clip, Jody and Bomani are having a conversation that's bigger than just sports about the importance of creating opportunities for people and what that really takes.
Baseline talent has to be there. And then we go from there. And yes, after that point, we are talking about nurturing. We are talking about belief.
Yeah.
We are talking about affirming within people, this is something that you can do. And I am going to train you to do this excellently because you can, in fact, be excellent at this.
And the sort of corollary to giving someone opportunity is also giving someone multiple chances. And so often I feel like it comes down to the how short is the leash for screwing
yes.
up, you know, and that's often what it takes. It takes faith, you know, in the real deepest way.
One of the things that I find interesting about sports and that you've already addressed a little bit, I want to dive deeper into is sometimes there can be this real pressure around winning and the yeah. championship and that kind of being the only piece that actually matters, even though people kind of give lip service to the idea of like it's about having fun. That's not really like the emotional message that people often send when you lose. So
yeah,
I'm curious what valuable do's or don'ts you have learned over your years of being an athlete and coaching athletics as it applies to failure and losing.
Yeah, well, it's funny. I mean, we did a whole episode about losing. I mean, a lot of these episodes are built around just sort of curiosities I've had for a long time about sports, watching sports, playing sports. And one of the curiosities I've had is just like, what must it be like to be on a team that just loses over and over and over and over? And so, you know, we talked to a few people who kind of experienced that. And what you hear from them, and I think it's true, it's not like a coping mechanism. What you hear from them is that really, the stuff that gives you satisfaction is not whether you win or lose. It's so easy to fall into cliches here, you know, but it's how you play the game or, you know, all those other things around a team dynamic. And so this is part of what we kind of drive at in the episode. But it's like when you see a team, you so often want to say like, well, what's their record? And that is your first kind of measure of, is this a successful team or is this an unsuccessful team? And in fact, you know, at the end of the day, what you really should be looking for is culture, right? And so often when people talk about successful teams that they've been on, they don't talk about the record. They talk about the culture. And you can talk to people who've been on, and we do in the episode, who've been on teams that have not won many games at all, but they look back on it fondly because they're like, we were bonded together. We found our sense of achievement in all sorts of other ways that weren't just, are we going to win this game or lose this game? And the really fascinating thing is that meant that they still went into every single game kind of thinking like, we can win, right? Mm. Despite all the evidence to the contrary, because culture is sort of divorced from what the score is at the end, and it's regenerative, right? And so you lose a game, but your culture sustains and it pushes you to then go into the next game thinking that you can win or thinking that there's a sense of achievement to be had.
I always have a soft spot in my heart for people who are fans of teams that are abysmally bad.
Yeah.
Like if you like a team and they're winning the championship, whether it's the Super Bowl or the World Series or whatever, I'm like, oh, whatever. That's not really interesting to you. But if you're like, this is my favorite team and they haven't won in 100 years, that's when I'm like, okay, yeah. I actually do have some curiosity about talking to you about this.
Oh yeah. And I mean, it's funny, I'm a Philly sports fan, and I think like Philly, I think for a long time wore that mantle and probably justifiably. But the last, like, if I'm being honest, like the last 15, 20 years of being a Philly sports fan have been pretty good. Like, there's been a lot of, and so it's this weird disconnect, I think, between like, yeah, we're like the lovable losers or the hateable losers in Philly's case. But then we've also won a lot. Like, it's, you know, it's very weird. But the flip side of that is like the Chicago Cubs winning after 100 and some years, there's nothing better. There's nothing better, right? Like, and seeing the team win after all that time and seeing the way that tells the story of the city of Chicago, I mean, it's just kind of like, it's everything I love when you see someone actually achieve that. But, you know, more than anything, it's kind of like this collective decision to say, this matters to us. I'm going to use this as a way to commune with other people. I'm going to use this as a way to kind of like be a proxy for pride in myself and my city and my neighbors. And so, I mean, that's the kind of stuff I notice when I feel like I'm seeing the connection between a town and a team.
Well, something we've talked about a lot on this show over the years and in this season in particular is kind of how to talk to someone when they're dealing with something really hard, whether you are on the team or whether you are the coach. What can you say to someone after a hard loss, after something that people are really taking to heart and it's a struggle? How do you approach those conversations?
Two things come to mind. I had a coach who said,
after a really, really hard loss. One said, you can live with this pain. Like, you just have to live with the pain of this loss, right? It is here. There's nothing you can do about it. And moreover, I think he said something like, the next 2 days are going to be really rough. Be okay with that, but do not try to fix the past. You cannot fix the past. Don't go back over and over and try and pick at that scab. You can learn lessons from it. You can acknowledge the pain, but you're not going to be able to go back and change the course of what happened. We just talked to a psychologist who looks at sports and talks about winning and losing. And he offered a really interesting idea, which is that losses actually may have more to teach us than wins. This did not go right. We did not do this. We didn't prepare in this way. This went wrong. Our opponent did something that we hadn't anticipated. You know, there are real lessons. But the emotional effect of a loss really gets in the way of learning those lessons. Can you get to a place where you can really learn from the most painful stuff as opposed to just sort of being exuberant when things go your way? Often the hardest, most difficult, most painful moments are the ones that in the end, with time, you find going back to and saying, okay, I really grew there. I really learned some lessons there. And again, sports again is like another great little test lab in which to do this, right? How can you set up systems for yourself and for your community where you are learning from losses, where you're talking about it in a healthy way, where you're not just sort of putting off to the side and moving on, but you in fact are kind of like understanding that there are lots of lessons there.
Even just hearing you talk, like I came in being like, I'm not into sports, but hearing you talk about it, I realized like my definition of sports was very narrow. In the sense of it being like, it's like competitive team sports which I associate strongly with like not being good enough and like letting people down and then having people be like angry and disappointed in me, which is a feeling where I was like, this is not fun. And other people seem to have fun.
I'd rather go bomb on stage.
Oh, absolutely. Endless. I mean, but like, yeah, I get so many of the pieces you're talking about are things that I found through like comedy and being on stage with people, right? Like how can you be part of a team? How can you make other people look good? How can you like build something collaboratively? And it's just like, mine is the nerdiest imaginary world, but also, you know, being genuine about this, some really big parts of my life right now that are very meaningful and that I feel like I've taken a lot from, I think do fall under this umbrella of sports as you're describing it. They're just not team sports. So like, I have non-competitively started going to like the local community pool and I swim and I do 30 minutes of exercise. And through that, I have met a bunch of other people in that pool, one of whom have become a really good friend. She's 101 years old and she swims all the time.
Way.
I've learned so many lessons about like the importance of just doing something consistently, about how if you push yourself a little bit, like it lets you to continue to be able to do it and get better.
What you're articulating here is what we're trying to get to. I'm not through this show or just in general, I'm not trying to be like everyone needs to automatically decide to be into sports. I think it's more kind of sports, as I said, is as good of a place to learn all these big important lessons as any other. And that's really the defense. There's probably 15 different lenses one can carry around to look at the world and to look at themselves. And I think sports is just as good as any other and happens to be mine. But as long as you have a lens, right, for yourself, that's the important thing.
If someone's listening to this and they were a little bit more in the me camp of like, they don't see sports as a lens and they kind of have these preconceptions about it. What are three steps that they can take to bring sports into their life and to start using that lens?
There's a lot of great journalism and reporting that is like sports shows, but barely sports shows, you know, and I happen to have worked on a number of them, but you know, series like 30 for 30. I mean, you hear it all the time. I'm not into sports, but I'm into 30 for 30. I think almost everyone in the world would want to watch OJ Made in America or The Two Escobars or all these kind of wonderful films that help us understand human emotion and larger cultures and so forth. And then it's like, okay, engage with sports storytelling in that way and then carry it into when you watch a game and look not just at the score, but look at how are these human beings interacting with each other? What's going on the bench? You know, what's the bond between these people? And it's just like a chance. You don't get to look through someone's like office building and see how they interact with each other, but you get to look at that in sports, right? You get to see how humans interact with each other. So it's just this great chance to see people kind of working stuff out in real time. You know, we've touched on a couple of the things that I think are also just important takeaways, but an understanding that achievement can mean a bunch of different things and success can mean a bunch of different things. There was one thing you said earlier that like really struck me and reminded me that it's one of my favorite kind of lessons, and maybe it fits into a sort of takeaway. But you said something like, in my comedy career, I've learned all these lessons about how to do this and this. And then you said how to make other people look good. When I've coached teams, like all-star teams, like the best people under 24 in the country, we're going to make a team for a world championship for them. And so you get these tryouts where you have like 50 kids who are all incredibly good, and you got to whittle them down to 20 or whatever for a final roster. It's a good problem to have, but it's really tough. And the thing I say to everyone is, your job this weekend is to make the people around you look good. And trust that when you do that, we as coaches will notice. And that's what we're looking for. And by making others look good, you make yourself look good. No greater sort of, what is it, multiplier effect than like making others around you look good. It will just reap its rewards for everyone involved.
One of the things that I love about that, and that has really spoken to me in working with other people, collaborative and creative spaces, that I wonder if this is true for you in the athletic and sports spaces, is that, is there space for tenderness and for vulnerability in sports and in athletics?
Oh, yes. I think it's the thing that takes you to from being a good group of performers to a great team is vulnerability, love, and openness to each other in whatever really difficult to pin down way. At the end of the day, I think it's like, it's trust, right? Do you trust the people around you? Do you believe in them? Have they been vulnerable with you? And like, that manifests itself in performance under really, really stressful conditions, you know, and there's physiological explanations for that, right? When people are stressed, you know, their body seizes up and they get tense. And if you're in a comfortable environment, in every sense of the word, like, you're less likely to do that, right? And you may not tense up because you have faith. You hear athletes talk about it all the time, like, we play for each other, right? And that only comes when you really know them and they've been vulnerable and you've been vulnerable to them.
We've talked a lot about the kind of individual level and ways in which sports can help individuals grow in terms of values and goals and mindset and all of that. I do want to talk a little bit about like the systemic level, since I think it's really interesting to look at things like how in tennis, right, like women's tennis built this model of equality that hasn't really been replicated in many other sports. And they're kind of tackling some of the systemic injustices of equal pay. And I know that that's a big issue right now with like the women's national soccer team here in the U.S. And obviously, we've seen with like people like Colin Kaepernick, right, like bringing big political, systemic, social issues onto the field. And often that gets people very upset. So
yeah,
I'm curious in your reporting and also just in your own personal opinion, like how do the big issues of the world and the ability of sports to shine a spotlight on them, how do they intersect in ways that are powerful or ways that show the limits of sport?
I mean, I truly believe that it can be incredibly powerful to see these things played out in the world of sports. And I think we've seen examples of that over and over and over. And you think about the civil rights movement in this country, a lot of it was, sports was a huge part of that. And a lot of that was played out through sport. We have an episode on gender in sports, and it's a little bit about the sort of trans athlete question, which is certainly roiling, but it's more a larger exploration of how for a long time, sports has been this world in which gender norms and the way we talk about gender has both been reflected, but actually been sort of like codified, right? And that the separate spheres for men and women in sports have often been a reflection and then a driver of the kind of stereotypes and separate spheres for men and women in the rest of society. And I really came to believe in the course of reporting on that like in that particular issue, at least, sports is this weird lagging indicator. Like, I actually think the rest of the world is having like, I mean, they're fraught, but I think the rest of the world genuinely is having like open and expansive conversations about gender right now. And sports is like retreating in this weird way. And so the episode, I think, ends up being kind of a little clarion call to be like, no, I've always felt like sports can be leading here and sports can be a place where we can kind of like push and be more expansive in our thinking.
You grew up in Costa Rica and now you live in Brooklyn.
I did.
Having lived in two different places, different languages, different cultures, what about sports strikes you as universal in your experience? And what strikes you as like there's some meaningful changes between cultures when it relates to sports?
You know, one of the things I'm most thankful of for playing sports and sort of having, is that like you can go to any city, any country, and find people who care about this thing that you care about or play this sport that you play. I moved to a new city and like within 2 days, I had like seven new friends, right? Just because I showed up, here's this team, here you go. There's your social circle. Like you can find that through comedy. You can find that through board games. You can find that through, you know, video games. You can find that through politics. There's a million ways you can find that. But to me, it's like so clean and provides such good continuity and has throughout my life. I'm really, really thankful for that.
Jody, it was such a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, this was great. I really appreciate it.
That is it for this episode of How to Be a Better Human. Great job, team. You left it all out there on the podcast field, and I am proud of you. Thank you so much to today's guest, Jody Avergan. You can hear his podcast, Good Sport, wherever you're listening to this. I am your host, Chris Duffy, and you can find more from me, including my weekly newsletter, and information about my live comedy shows at chrisduffycomedy.com. How to Be a Better Human is brought to you on the TED side by Anna Phelan, who dominates at midfield, the unstoppable defender Whitney Pennington Rogers, and power forward Jimmy Gutierrez. This episode was fact-checked by Julia Dickerson and Erica Yoon, who are known as the Venus and Serena of source citations. From PRX, our show is brought to you by Morgan Flannery with a 6-foot wingspan, the reigning world champion Rosalind Tordesillas, and winner of multiple Olympic gold medals in podcasting, Jocelyn Gonzalez. And of course, thanks to you for listening to our show and making this all possible. We'll be back next week with even more How to Be a Better Human. Support for How to Be a Better Human comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or you just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switch to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/betterhuman. That's odoo.com/betterhuman. Odoo. Modern management made simple.